Good evening, everyone. This is Chuck K04K, and welcome to the Bakken Amateur Radio Society Fusion Radio Net. This net operates on and through the Minnesota-Wisconsin room number 21493, and it is an open technical net, but please check internet control. Tonight's net control stations are 34 Any Oscar Delta, Otis, K9EQ Chris, K04K Chuck, and 80MI Pete. The Bakken Amateur Radio Society takes its name from Earl Bakken, who is the founder of Medtronic. Earl was always interested in radio and is a founding sponsor of the Pavic Museum of Broadcasting. Earl allows us to use his name because he's a strong supporter of learning, experimentation, and helping others. You can learn more about Bars and Earl at www.w0md, and remember that the 444.075 and the 444.525 operate from the Medtronic facility near Highway 10 and I-35W in Moundsview, Minnesota. Net control will only be taking check-ins from stations with traffic for the net. Please reply with your name, city, and state. We'll acknowledge your call and put it on the list in the order received. Remember, there is a chat window available at hamoperator.com. Select MinWiz and then MinWiz chat. All right, is there anybody with an announcement for the net tonight? Please check in now. Name, city, and state.
This is Rick up in central Minnesota, up here at Little Falls, northwest of St. Cloud, N0BJN. That's November 0, Bravo, Juliet, November.
Hey, good evening, Rick. November 0, Bravo, Juliet, November. Why don't you go ahead and give us the Ham Fest update. Go ahead now.
Hi to Chuck and everyone on the MinWiz technical net. This is Rick up here in central Minnesota, about 96 miles northwest of Minneapolis, St. Paul, up here in about the middle of Minnesota. Yep, you are correct, Chuck. Hamfest season is starting to crank up here across Minnesota. I have three Minnesota Hamfest announcements for the group. The first one is the Cabin Fever Reliever St. Cloud Hamfest is coming up on Saturday, February 18th. Being held at the St. Cloud National Guard Armory. The address is 1710 Veterans Drive or 8th Street North in St. Cloud, Minnesota. It runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Admission is $10. There'll be a VE testing at 10 a.m. There'll be hourly door prizes and a grand prize drawing. For more info on the Cabin Fever Reliever, St. Cloud, Minnesota Hamfest coming up on Saturday, February 18th, visit their website. It's w0sv.club. Phonetically, that website would be whiskey0sierravictor.charlielimauniformbravo. And that is for the Cabin Fever Reliever, St. Cloud, Minnesota Hamfest, coming up on Saturday, February 18th. The Midwinter Madness Buffalo Hamfest is coming up on Saturday, March 18th. It's being held at the Buffalo Civic Center. The address is 1306 County Road 134 in Buffalo, Minnesota. Buffalo is northwest of Minneapolis and St. Paul on Highway 55. It runs from 8 a.m. to noon. There'll be a VE testing at 7:30 a.m. They'll have door prizes and a grand prize drawing at 11 a.m. For more info on the Midwinter Madness Buffalo Hamfest on Saturday, March 18th, check out their website. It's k0ltc.org. Phonetically, that website would be Kilo Zero Lima Tangle Charlie.org, and that's for the Midwinter Madness Buffalo Hamfest coming up on Saturday, March 18th at the Buffalo Civic Center in Buffalo, Minnesota. Chuck, if I can here, I'll let the system reset and I'll come right back with one more Hamfest announcement for Minnesota right after this. The Brainerd Hamfest is coming up on Saturday, April 15th. Being held at the National Guard Armory on Wright Street on the south side of Brainerd, Minnesota. The address is 1115 Wright Street. This one's pretty easy to get to. Just take Business Highway 371 into Brainerd, Minnesota, and you'll go about six blocks, and Wright Street will come up on your right-hand side. and go east on Wright Street about eight blocks or so, and the National Guard Armory will come up on your left side. That's the Brainerd Ham Fest in Brainerd, Minnesota, Saturday, April 15th. The website is BrainerdHam.org. That's BrainerdHam.org. With that, we'll send it back to you, Chuck. Thanks for letting me on with the Ham Fest stuff. There should be one coming up in Duluth, Minnesota, too, before long. I think that one comes up in May, so perhaps next week I'll have that one on the list as well. Anyway, thanks for being there, and all the magic that you and Chris, K9EQ, and the rest of your group do here every Monday night. I greatly appreciate that. We'll send it back to you from Rick in Central Minnesota, up here at Little Falls, and Zero BJM.
Rick, I want to thank you for keeping us up to date on that stuff. Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to send it to Otis. He says he's got some fill for us here. So Whiskey 4 in the Oscar Delta, over to you.
Well, good evening, Chuck, and everyone else on the net. And right on cue, we have more deals through Yaesu. They actually started February 1st, and they run through March 31st, 2023. On the FTDX 101 MP, it's a $300 instant coupon. On the FTDX 101D, a $200 instant coupon. The FTDX 10, a $100 instant coupon. The FT710 AESS, a $100 instant coupon. The FTM200DR, a $40 coupon. The FTM600R, a $30 rebate coupon. And the FT5DR, a $50 instant coupon. Keep in mind, this is for the United States and Canada. For everyone else, please check with your local dealer for any details on any rebates or instant coupons. Also, the DR2X repeater program continues to run through March 31st, 2023. Trade-ins not accepted. $700 for the DR2X without the LAN unit and $900 with the LAN unit. I'll post the link over in MenWiz chat. And other than the new announcement on the FTM 500, which I'm sure Chris will have something to say about, that's pretty much all we have for the net this evening. W4IOD, back to net control. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you, Otis. It's always a pleasure doing business with you. And speaking of business, we got some new stuff from Yaesu. And I know there's been a bunch of discussion online, so Chris, I'm going to send it to you and give us a heads up what's going on. K9EQ to take it, K0-4K.
Okay, very good, Chuck. Thanks for that. And yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the recent announcement of the Yaesu FTM 500 and a little background. What happened was is that this past weekend, an organization called hamlife.jp published a announcement about the FTM 500 that was in Japanese. So I have converted that into English, and that document is available on hamoperator.com. So if you want to see that document, you can go ahead and see it. As with a lot of these things, I think they involve a little interpretation. There's been a lot of stuff going on the internets, and so I thought this would be a great time to talk about general ham radio manufacturing and sales processes, not necessarily specific to Yaesu. And then we can talk about what we know about the FTM 500 in particular. But also I want to talk about things like rumors and how we can have a good idea of what's really going on by, you know, basically making logical assumptions. So let's start with that then. And so I want to talk just a moment about radio business practices, and this generally pertains to companies that make radio equipment for the amateur radio market. for manufacturing, design and manufacturing of radios, there's a certain sequence you go through. The marketing requirements get established. Those get translated into a design. Some kind of a prototype is constructed. Now, that prototype may look nothing like the final product. More specifically, it's a prototype to help with the engineers in developing a manufacturable unit. So they'll move from that to a physical prototype, and usually do a limited build on those, no more than about 50 units. And those will go to labs and regulatory agencies to get approvals and all this kind of business, all the stuff you have to do. They'll be used by the software developers to, you know, develop the software and firmware for the radio and so forth and so on. These are not saleable units, so they're usually all just managed with the internals of the company. You'll never see these things in a store or sold on the open market. They're not certified by any of the regulatory agencies to be sold. From that, we go into the first production run, which is always a stressful time for any manufacturer. But that's when they put their money where the marketing is, and they manufacture a run of units. And depending upon the manufacturer, it could be from a few hundred to a few thousand units. If you're a cell phone manufacturer, your initial production run is probably in the hundreds of thousands, and in some cases millions of units, which is really a nervous time for the person that gives the okay to start that production run. So when this initial production run gets out into the market and people are messing around with it, and of course all of a sudden now you have a lot more people getting a lot more experience with the radio all of a sudden, You traditionally find things that you missed or you'd like to improve that didn't get caught in the prototype phase. And so there will usually be one or more iterations on the hardware. These are typically minor changes that are incorporated into subsequent production runs. For example, the FT3D had between 3 and 4 updates, depending upon how you count them. Generally, without opening the radio, you can't tell what version you have, or maybe looking at the serial number, someone in the know would be able to tell. But usually these changes don't have any sort of major impact on the radio. They certainly don't have any impact on the features. You know, the feature set does not change when you do these subsequent updates. And there's your first hint. You might not, you know, if you don't have to have it right away when it comes off the presses, maybe you want to hang out a little bit. So in the sales of these units, the marketing and sales part of it, we'll talk about that a little bit. So as I mentioned, the first production run is usually limited. It's not as large as subsequent production runs, and that limits the initial release. And so it's not possible for these companies to be able to fill the global demand for these radios instantly. They're not Apple, where Apple can build a million cell phones, have them in inventory, and dump them on Best Buy, all at once. So, since, you know, Yaesu, Icom, these guys are in Japan, they will typically do their initial release of the product in Japan. So what has to happen before they can sell a radio? Well, the distributors and sales channels need to know about the radio before they can place orders for it. So, you know, Ham Radio Outlet and these guys are scratching their head and they're trying to figure out how many units should they order for their stores and guessing at how many they're going to sell and stuff like that. So at a certain time, Yaesu's got to let the sales channels know, this in this case Japan, about the radio. And that's the first time stuff really starts to leak out. That's when we first start to see some information show up. When you're under development and you're doing all the stuff internal to the company, it's a lot easier to keep things under wraps than when you start contacting your sales channels and say, hey, look, we got this new radio. You guys want to buy some? So anyway, what happens is that confidentially the sales channels are given this information, and then usually several weeks after that, you'll get a general announcement to inform the masses. In this case, it would be Japanese hams that would be interested in it. So anyway, that's kind of the that's kind of how that works. Another note here, and just in production, is that manufacturers need to limit the number of different items that they sell, because each item that they have available for sale, in this case amateur radio equipment, just to have that item available for sale costs them money. That item sitting in their catalog or ready for people to order is going to cost them money every day, every week, every month. And so there is a desire on manufacturers' parts to on their part to limit the number of items that they have in their catalog. They also need to have some kind of market distinction between the products, so that there's a combination of value and cost or price to the user that where they can say, well, I get this more value if I pay that much more money. And so they want to have all their products kind of in a nice, orderly kind of fashion, so that people interested in a certain type of thing, you know, they can make these determinations that, well, this is different from that. It's a little bit more expensive, but this is what I get when I pay more. Generally, but not, maybe not always true, the manufacturers, the higher the price of the product, the happier they are, they make more money. So generally, some of these features you might want are just incrementally expensive to add to the higher priced radios, and that just works out nicer for the manufacturers. So the other reason they want to get rid of products is that they want to have a nice, clean, understandable product line where people understand what they're getting. So anyway, so you might, one of the things, and we'll talk about it a little bit related to that, is, well, what happens when the FDM 500 does come out? So why would you want to buy the radio right away, or why would you not want to buy it right away? Well, there's a certain bit of emotion involved when all this stuff starts happening. So there's kind of the question, do you really need it or you just want it? A lot of people will buy the radios as soon as they can because there's some sort of bragging rights to it. You know, hey, I'm the first one on the block with the FDM 500, and that's really cool. But you're paying for that privilege. But maybe it's worth it. The manufacturers know this, by the way. They know that there's going to be so many people that basically will pay what that radio costs to be that first in line to get it when it first becomes available. In other words, the radio is more expensive when it's introduced than later on. The reason you might want to wait is more it's known about the radio later on. Maybe it just doesn't seem as important after the heat has kind of dissipated. And then, as I mentioned before, there are design updates that you might want to take advantage of. It may not make a difference at all, but, you know, there may be some improvements that, you know, are subtly significant when in the later designs. Who knows? Nobody knows. So anyway, that's the amateur radio business in general. That applies to just about everybody making a ham radio, whether it be Flex Radio or ICOM or anybody. So let's talk about rumors. People are wackle. You will be happier if you never look at Facebook again. Scientific evidence. Not making this stuff up. Social media is very addictive. And some people have a lot of time to spend on social media. I'm not one of them. But when you see people get on there and how they rant about stuff, it's like, oh, I just don't have time for this. It's, and probably the louder they rant, the less they know about the subject. And Facebook and other companies, you know, encourage this sort of thing because it gets everybody upset, and you get everybody all broiled and angry and going at it, and that's good business for Facebook. Facebook is not financially successful when everybody is happy and things are copacetic. They want drama. They want to stir things up, and so the algorithms just encourage that sort of behavior. And not, you know, 99% of the people on there are probably extremely well behaved and reasonable. I mean, hams in general are great people, no question about it. But you know, in any group, you're going to have that fraction of a percent, and they are the loudest, most annoying, noisiest people in that group. And of course, they like it because now all the focus is on them. Did you know this about Facebook? If you have friends on Facebook and they gain weight, probability is you're going to gain weight too. We think we're capable of independent thought and actions. So how do you deal with rumors? How do you control rumors, assuming you want to? You basically control rumors with facts. You just say, well, these are the facts, and you're just making stuff up, and here's the information. And so that's how you handle rumors. Now, some people may not want to handle rumors because it does stir the pot. It does create a lot of interest and emotion. And as Facebook will tell you, it creates more sales down, you know. So that's why, you know, it's social media is designed the way that it is. For us, don't get caught up in the emotion. It's a waste of time. It's not going to change anything. No matter all the ranting and all the discussions on Facebook or whatever, the FTM 500 is the FTM 500, and none of this will make a bit of difference to what that radio is. So you could ultimately just shut all that stuff down and just wait for the radio to come out, and you'd be fine. And by the way, when it first comes out, you're going to pay more for it. So what is it that's coming out? Now that we've gotten through the rumors and stuff and we want to bypass all that, how do we figure out what it is? Well, there's a couple things that we do. We make some informed assumptions, and these assumptions are based on engineering and legal requirements. You can't just build anything you want to build. There are going to be engineering constraints. There are going to be cost constraints and things like that. There are going to be legal requirements you have to follow. You don't have any choice about those. You have to follow the legal requirements. The capabilities and history of the company impact what that radio will be. If they don't have the ability to do something, it's a pretty good bet that something is not going to be in that radio. So you can look at the different companies, and they all try to carve out their position in the market and be good at certain things. Like, you know, we like to make fun of the Baofangs. They're good at being cheap. and good at being cheap. And so that's what they do. Other companies, that isn't a good business model for them. Also, we look at technology trends within the sector. As technology improves, like you get faster processors or maybe new chips that make it a lot easier to do an IF strip or something like that, you can expect those to be incorporated, you know, within new equipment. If in a lot of cases, if for no other reason, that the newer chips are less expensive and do more than the older chips. And also competition is going to determine, you know, what happens on the radio, what features that there are there. You know, it's risky to, you know, basically build a radio that's like bonkers different from anything that is out there. For one, people aren't going to really understand it because they haven't seen anything like that before. And it might flop or it might be successful, but what you probably did is you just saved the competition a lot of R&D money, because they'll just watch you, see if you're successful, and just kind of follow and see what you did, follow what you did. You know, so from this we can determine an awful lot. I'll give you an example. I bet, and I have not seen it, and I have no way of knowing this, that the FTM500 chassis will be the same chassis that the FTM200 and the FTM300 use. Why? Because it's expensive to make the castings for an aluminum product like that. You know, that mold is going to be machined. It's going to be expensive, you know, probably costing hundreds of thousands of dollars just for that fixture, that mold, to make those aluminum chassis. You're going to want to get your money's worth out of those aluminum, that out of your, that NRE, non-recurrable, non-recurring expenses that you paid to get that chassis built. So there is a big incentive for a company to use the same tooling that they've used for other radios. Look at how all the Baofengs look about the same. You know, molding plastic versus aluminum, maybe. Circuit boards are about the same. That means all your production fixtures are very similar. You probably want to use a lot of the same parts so you don't have to inventory a whole new set of parts. You know, you have 1,000 parts in these radios. That's a big deal. So anyway, you do things like that. The other thing that you would do is you take a reasonable and consistent information from potentially reliable sources, and maybe you validate those sources. You know, the best thing we can do is look at the world through a critical eye and just ask a question. Well, why is he telling me that? What is that in my best interest or his best interest? But you just don't take everything somebody tells you and just say, oh yeah, well, you know, I saw it on TV, it must be true. No, we look at all that stuff, and we should do this when we do a lot of things in life, not just radios. And we say, is that a reasonable source? Is that reasonable information? Are they trying to influence me in a unreasonable way? You know, stuff like that. So what we came up with was hamlife.jp. I really don't know anything about them, but they came out with this publication that was originally, it's in Japanese, and my attempt at a translation is on the web. And this is my impression on now reading the translation, and that is, it's reasonable. The information in there is consistent and reasonable with what I would expect in this industry from that manufacturer, with their capabilities, and it positions itself within the product line very reasonably. So, in fact, one of the things that helped convince me that this is probably reliable information is the fact that they put a note on the picture that they have of the radio and saying that that's a mock-up that hamlife.jp did. I don't believe it's a mock-up, but they're clearly trying to let people know that it might look different from this, and that's a reasonable thing to say. Somebody was making this stuff up, they would not put a thing on there saying, well, this isn't the actual picture, just something we put together. You're not going to see that from somebody who's doing clickbait. And by the way, I should mention the term clickbait. People will do that a lot, especially in social media, just to get you to click on things. I see this a lot on YouTube with the ham radio stuff. You know, the guys sit there and screaming and yelling about something going on or whatever, and you just got to see, why is this happening? And whatever, and there's really nothing to it. It's just clickbait, gets you to click on it. So you watch the YouTube, which they make money from. Number of minutes people spend watching YouTube makes them more money. So what I want to do now is I want to go through the features of the FTM500 and kind of give you an idea what's really new, where we've seen things like this before in Yaesu's product line, and how significant maybe. Well, maybe it's up to you to decide how significant the features are. I would judge this radio as an incremental change over what's been out there. It does incremental things, which is, getting back to business practices, what they tend to do. You don't want to come out with the ultimate radio right away. A friend of mine who used to work with ICOM, back in the day, this is 1990, maybe, he would be in Japan, he'd go into Mr. Inoue's office, president of ICOM, and Mr. Inoue would close his door, and there was this chart on the door, which had all of ICOM's innovations for the next 10 years. Kid you not. Well, that's the story he told me. They had it charted out for the next 10 years what all their innovations were going to be. They could do most of them right now. Maybe they had to wait for new chips to come out or something for some of them. But you don't want to put your best foot forward immediately. That's just business. It has nothing to do with companies like ICOM or Yaesu or anybody. Motorola. That's just how business works. Okay, what is it? Talked enough about all this stuff. You want to know what it is. From previous radios, here are some of the features. The FT710, which is an HF radio, and really don't know a heck of a lot about it, other than, you know, whatever. Its big thing is a is this AESS, which is, and I forget what it stands for, Audio Enhanced Speaker System? I don't know. Anyway, so if you go back and you look at the FT710 brochure, I mean, it looks like a nice radio. They make a big deal about the speaker and the sound, that it's phase corrected. No idea what that means. And they emphasize frequency ranges, and presumably it's easier to understand the stations that you're listening to. Well, I mean, and something that they've done cool here, and that is in the FTM500, they've put what appears to be stereo speakers in the control head, and, you know, like this hamlife.jp has a rendering of what that might look like. You know, we don't know for sure. But according to the document that was written in Japanese, it's a stereo 6-watt amplifier in the front, the control head, and 3 watts in the back. Now, 3 watts is consistent with their other radios, which is reasonable. They're using the same audio chip, probably, in the radio in the back. But to put the speakers in the front, that's kind of a clever idea. One is, you can get today much more efficient, much better speakers, let me put that way, than you could 10 years ago. And it has to do with the chips that are driving those speakers. Because you can, and you probably all witnessed this, you can take a pretty small speaker and make it sound pretty good. And part of the trick is, you know, the speaker is too small to really be a good speaker, but the electronics compensates for that and can make a small speaker sound good. So, you know, when you think about it, this is an obvious thing to do. Put the speaker in the control head. It saves you having a speaker that you can't fit in the car anyway. And, you know, the control head is usually something that's in front of you, and what better place to put a speaker, except you wouldn't put a speaker where the control head is because there's no room for it in all the cars, and that type of thing. And so it's one of those when I look at it and I go, huh, wonder why nobody's done that before. Well, Yaesu, as far as I know, is the first one to do that. I'm going to credit the FT5D for their claim of a 2.4-inch touch panel. It's not, I don't think it's quite as big. It's not as big as the FTM400, which has a really nice control panel. But the FTM300 did not have a touch panel, and this radio does. So I threw that in the FT5D bracket, something that inherited from the FT5D. Other things that inherited from the FT5D, PMG, Programmable Memory Groups. I have to admit, I haven't played with that yet, and I have the radio for a year and a half. MAG, MAG, or whatever, Memory Auto Grouping. Another thing I haven't played with in the year and a half that I've had the radio, so apparently you can survive without it, but it's supposed to make things easier. Bluetooth, audio only. And I think the FT3 had that as well. In the FT5, you've got audio recording, if you have an SD card, and playback. And we did get 16-character memory tags with the FT5. FT3 might have had those. I don't remember. So those are features that are listed in the brochure for the 500 that I'm going to credit with the FT5. I'm going to credit the FTM200 with the FACC, F-A-C-C, Funneled Air Convection Conductor. I don't know, maybe it makes more sense in Japanese. It's a new thermal design that, let's put it this way, the FTM100 and 400 use the old thermal design. Pretty much everybody else uses this FACC. The thermal design was an issue with the early 400s and that type of thing. So it's much improved. They did a much better job. They actually mounted the PA transistor the way the manufacturer says it should be mounted. But also this funneled air cooling is on the FTM3200, 3207, 7250, and FTM300, as well as the 200. So what's new with the FTM500? So we already talked about one, which was having the speaker in the front, albeit that I'm going to credit the idea coming, or the technology coming from an HF rig. Something we thought the FTM400 XDR would have in it. Well, I guess we felt in the 400 XDR it would have A and B digital receive, which it didn't. The 300 has that. The FT2 has that going back that far. What's different in the 500 is that you can simultaneously receive on both the A and the B band in digital. Previously, you could do that in analog, one digital and one analog, but not both of them digital. The technology difference there is that you essentially need the capability of processing two vocoder threads. It's likely only one DSP, but that DSP has the capability to run two vocoder threads at the same time. And Yaesu pays a license fee for two vocoders, I would imagine. Another thing that they're mentioning is a high-speed spectrum scope. This is really interesting, and I kind of put this towards the top of the list because of the technology interest here. I noticed in the FT5 that the receiver in it is much faster. They did something in the receiver in the FT5 to make that radio scan five times faster than, say, the FT2. And, how fast you can scan is limited by some of the digital circuitry, the direct digital synthesis, and some other things like that, how fast the processors can respond, and how fast phase lock loops settle in on the new frequency. Generally, all that stuff takes more power or new technology. So I am guessing here that some of the FT5 technology with a faster receiver has made it into the spectrum scope, although I'm thinking the spectrum scope in the 500 is a lot faster than the FT5. It's possible that they may have done it by utilizing a DSP in some way that I'm not clear about. The front panel can tilt. I think plus or minus 20 degrees, probably because that then allows you to point the speaker more at you. They have an optional sort of a ball joint type mobile mount that gives you even more flexibility with positioning the display. And by the way, putting that 6-watt audio amp in the display means that the connection between the radio and display has to be completely different. If they're going to use the same wiring scheme, that means that they have to have a mechanism of probably putting like 20 or 30 volts on that connection so that they can get enough current through it to run those 6-watt audio amps. Right now they just have an 8-volt power supply, and it's really limited in the amount of power that it can put out. They have something new, E20-IV, and I don't think that's intravenously. It's easy to operate 4. Not sure where easy to operate 1, 2, and 3 went, but easy to operate 4. I assume that IV means 4 Roman numerals. It's the banner under which they are putting a bunch of features. And a Yaesu is about a couple of things they take pride in. One is making things easy to operate. So you can kind of see that they'd want to push that. The other is the quality of the audio. And we've already seen that with the speaker system. I would like to see something where on the transmit side, you didn't have to fiddle with mic vault levels. And because if somebody doesn't sound good on Fusion, it's probably because they have the mic gain too high. And why that just can't get taken care of by the radio, I have no idea. Anyway, under easy to operate, I mentioned that the scope, basically the frequency spectrum that you can do on these radios, that's faster. You can now, if you see a signal on the scope that you're interested in, like what repeater is that? Now you just touch that part on the screen, on the gigantic 2.4-inch screen, sarcasm is mine, and you move to that frequency. And you can also tap a frequency and move to the scope screen. So that's, you know, oops, sorry about that. That's nice. Prior to that, you'd have to go to the, you know, if you're in the VFO mode or something, you just, you know, you could just turn the scan on, the scope on. But if you're in a memory channel, you know, you have to jump through some hoops. They've just automated those hoops. Not hard to do, just a little code in the microprocessor. They have customized function lists, and that's all we know. CFL. I'm guessing what that is you have all these options and menu items in the radio. Probably the vast majority of them you're not interested in. Maybe you set them once and you're done. And perhaps it's a way of organizing those in a list that you prefer so that you can get to them faster. Maybe just using the buttons on the mic or something like that. Another feature is the ability to skip bands when using the VFO. Not something I was looking for or knew that I needed. But there you go. It's a microprocessor firmware change, and absolutely, not any impact. The memory tags. Now we have 16 character tags already. That was expanded from I think 10, and earlier radios like the FT2. The memory tags now support Chinese. So those of you out there who prefer your memory tags in Chinese, this is a radio for you. Sarcasm is mine. It's a good thing. You know, they have to support this radio globally, and it's a good thing to have that. An interesting point they make is it has a modern operating system. I have no idea exactly what they mean by that. Well, let's think about it. Modern operating system. Well, an operating system is like Windows, right? Mac OS, iOS, those are operating systems. I mean, the term system can also refer to other things like the system, how the radio works. But I'm thinking this is the underlying operating system of the radio. Through other means, it has appeared that Yaesu has been using an operating system called VXWorks. And just about all their radios. That's certainly used in the repeaters. VXWorks is the high reliability, relatively small, designed for embedded systems operating system. Satellites use VXWorks. The first Mars rover that was putting around on Mars, it used, it's dead now, VXWorks. So VXWorks is an operating system that is main focus is reliability, and it's meant for, you know, embedded systems where you're doing control and stuff like that. No surfing the web. There is no web browser for VXWorks. I've written applications under VXWorks back in the day. So anyway, my guess is that they have switched from VXWorks to another operating system. There are plenty around. VxWorks is a per-license operating system, so that means Yaesu has to pay a license fee every time they use VxWorks. They have two processors in their, well, they have three processors in the radio. Two of them are controllers, one for the display and one for the radio itself. They probably both have a licensed copy of VxWorks in them. And that probably adds a bit to the price of the radio, ultimately. VxWorks is not free. So they probably move to another OS. There's plenty of them out there. There's plenty of good OSs out there. The chip that they use to control the radios has traditionally been a Renesas chip. That's a 16-bit RISC chip, and its claim to fame, really, is that Renesas guarantees that they're going to make it forever. So there's a contract. I mean, Renesas will just say, you can go get the chip number and look it up online. Renesas says, well, we guarantee that we will make this chip available for at least 20 years after we notify you that we're discontinuing it, which is nice for a company like Yaesu because they don't have to worry about the processor chip going disappearing on them when they're in the middle of a run of a very popular, selling a very popular radio. And of course, they don't want to have to rewrite everything from scratch for a new processor and a new OS if the manufacturer suddenly makes their processor chip go bye-bye. Typically in the phone business, the chips that are used in phones are sold for between a year and a year and a half before they're discontinued. But in that time, they sell hundreds of millions of them or something, so it's a different market. I don't know what this means. I can only hope that they've moved to a more technologically modern CPU, something like in the ARM series. Just about everything runs ARM now. Your iPhones have run ARM since the very beginning. ARM appears everywhere, in automobiles, satellites on Mars, space telescopes, everywhere. Raspberry Pis run on ARM, and very small things run ARM, run under ARM too. It's really quite impressive. Advanced RISC machines is what ARM originally stood for. The IMRS board that Yaesu has and the DR2X is the first time I've seen Yaesu use an ARM chip. And I was just looking at that and saying, oh, it means they got a development kit for ARM. Maybe they'll do more stuff with ARM. The reason I like to see them switch to ARM is that these Renesas 16-bit RISC chips are power hogs. They're built on very old technology. And just to keep one of these chips running so it can do some stuff is about 40 milliamps. That might not sound like a lot, but I completed a project not too long ago where the chip that I was using would take about 2 milliamps while it's running, a lot less when it isn't or in standby. Doesn't make much difference for a mobile radio, but big difference for an HT where we're worried about power consumption. I think it's one of the reasons the power demand in the HTs is so high. You're running these two controllers, these Renesas chips, at about 40 milliamps each. And then you're running a DSP if you're doing digital. And, I mean, you'd expect the DSP is doing a heck of a lot work. It's doing a lot more work than the controller chips. I mean, it's a specialized kind of work. It's not a good controller. But I'm sure most of the power that goes into the radios here is because of those chips. And even when you put them in the standby, because if the chip doesn't have to be doing something, you're always putting it in the standby power isn't that great. Anyway, so that's what I have. There's no way to tell for sure until somebody opens up a radio to see if they've switched to a different processor. Please, whoever gets a radio, open it up and send me pictures. Price and availability. So this document that we had published in Japan mentioned a 50-watt and a 20-watt version. I think that's been done before. Of course, we don't see the 20-watt version in the U.S., but apparently in Japan it's a thing, probably because of the license structure over there and possibly other countries as well. The 50-watt version was listed at 94,600 yen. That sounds expensive. not that expensive, but about $700 US, which once again I think is reasonable. It's a new radio, has new stuff no other radios had. The FTM 400, when it was introduced, I think was 600, and that was 2013. So, yeah, Pete's informing me it's $700 US or 5 dozen eggs. So, and you get Yaesu to take eggs in exchange for a radio. And sales are supposed to begin in March, which is about correct for this timing that we're seeing, this distribution, assumed distribution to the sales channel. What can we expect to see? Forecast, who knows? It's totally up to Yaesu, so they can do whatever they want. But the way these companies behave, we can probably expect that the radio will be introduced at Hamvention in May. This will have given them time to, you know, get through a little bit of the backlog in Japan and stuff like that. And, you know, they have to translate manuals into English. This is a lot of work to internationalize a radio. All this stuff has to be translated. It takes a lot of time. So if all the original work is done in Japanese, I could see several months, it taking several months just to do the localization for getting the radio ready to be built for the U.S. And they can't build it until they, and they can't produce it in production until they've got all the documentation, the manuals done. So, introduction Hamvention would be just about right. My guess, purely my guess, this is total speculation, is that shipments will begin later in the year. Probably mid to late summer, maybe. Don't know. Could be completely wrong on this. They might have a stack of them at Hamvention, but that's my guess. But please recognize that's purely an assumption, purely a guess on my part. I have, other than past history and business practices, I have nothing else to base that on. Also, I will predict that the FTM 300 will be discontinued because we talked earlier about the radio having a specific spot in the lineup. And it's getting a little close to the FTM 300, especially now that they have the FTM 200. If the FTM 200 wasn't around, I would say that they would keep the 300. But with that FTM 200, you know, it's a good, better, best, that kind of a thing. And, yeah, maybe they'll keep it around. But I'll tell you this, if it does get discontinued, that's when you want to buy one. It'll have all the latest hardware changes. It'll be the lowest price it's ever going to be versus the highest price the FTM 500 is ever going to be. So, you know, you just might want to hang out and wait for a good price on the FTM 300. Once again, pure speculation on my part. I have no idea what they will do, but I'll tell you this. The first you will know it's been discontinued is when HRO and Gigaparts and these guys start running out of them. It's after they've started running out of them that the Yaesu will come along and tell you it's been discontinued. Why? Because as soon as they tell you it's discontinued, the value of that radio goes down. And you look, it's simple, right? Do you want to sell at the higher price or the lower price? They're a business. They want to sell at the higher price. So you don't want to destroy the market for your existing radio. And so the indications are going to be potentially a price drop that just happens all of a sudden, not because of Hamvention or Christmas, or May, be combined with that in disguise, and then HRO starts running out. It's really cool on HRO because you can go to the product page and you can see their inventory at all the different stores. So that's usually where I go to keep track of how the market is doing. Anyway, Chuck, there you go. I'm done with the report. We're almost done with the net, but back over to you, Chuck. And if you want to take off, that's okay. We can sit around and take questions. K0ORK from K9EQ.
All right, Chris. Well, you know me too well, but 8:30 is my witching hour, and I've got other plans I got to run to. Well, Chris, if you want to take questions afterwards, let's turn it over to you as net control. Otherwise, I'm going to call it a night, everyone. We'll catch you next week. We'll answer more questions then. This is Chuck K0 Horake, turning it over to Chris K9EQ.
Enjoy it.
Hey, buddy, you got off easy tonight. We don't do this much. I'd kind of planned on going into this in some detail, and then we'll be done with it. All right. Anybody have comments, questions, not just about the 500, but anything you want to bring up of a semi-technical nature? Go and give your presumptive net control a call, K9EQ. Well, maybe we answered all the questions. Thank you for your doing that. We're having a lot of stations. Their timers have timed out, and they're dropping off. So we might not have too much stuff here. But anybody want to bring anything up, K9EQ?
W4IOD, Otis, Stamping Ground, Kentucky.
And I got to say, I wasn't looking at the chat. Go ahead, Otis.
Well, thank you, Chris. And I'm going to work Steve's question into this. I'd actually posted we'll get to his question next week, but we'll go ahead and do it now if he's still connected. But the question from chat is a question on a YSF reflector. He'd like to bridge one to one of his club's new DR2X repeaters. He's looking for resources to help him learn about setting up a reflector, maintaining it, managing it, and bridging it to a WiresX room. So that is K3FZT, Steve. That is the question he had for us on chat, and I don't know if he's still connected or not. But back to you, Chris.
I don't know what he might connected to. Are you still there, Steve? K3FZT from K9EQ?
I dropped the wire. Connected to the YSF reflector. K3FZT.
Oh, okay, very good, Steve. Well, I will point you to hamoperator.com. Let me check here. If you go under Fusion, there's a category called Hotspots, which, and those of you that have gone to hamoperator.com lately, you've noticed it's being in the process of being reorganized. And I do have some information in there with regards to doing what you want to do. So you've got a repeater at your place and want to bridge it to a YSF reflector. So as far as doing the YSF reflector, what you end up doing is needing to run a server. The server for MinWiz here and a number of other organizations is being run on a common server. It's in a hosting facility in New York, and I find that works really well. They tend to have good internet, and it doesn't bog down when everybody's watching Netflix, and the reliability on that has been outstanding. So first of all, I could recommend doing that, although you can run it at your place, anywhere that you can connect to the internet, like on a Raspberry Pi or something like that. The software to do that, there's a general release of YSF reflector software that's out there. It's available on GitHub. And what you typically do, take that repository, you download it, you install build tools, which is pretty easy to do on your Raspberry Pi, and you go ahead and build a reflector, set up some configuration files, open up some ports, and off you go. It really helps to be comfortable with Linux at the command line. I've done that same thing that you would do on a Raspberry Pi, except I did it on a Linux system, which is, like I say, in a hosted data center. It's basically a CPU running whatever OS I pick, and then I do the same thing. I install the build tools, I download the repository, build it, set it up, and away it goes. A couple caveats there. The I've got a modified version of the stuff that is generally used on the internet with a focus on reliability. There are some things with the general distribution that's out there that it is you know, if you're running a network or something like that, all manner of stuff is going to come flying into your server. And the one that's out there, the generally available one, doesn't do much filtering. In fact, unless they've changed it, any 200 bytes you send to it will be reflected out to everybody else, and you don't even have to go through this formality of connecting to it. Just blast 200 bytes out to it, and whoever's connected, it'll send the 200 bytes out, even if you're not connected and sending it. So I fixed a bunch of stuff like that. You have to at least connect to it before you can send anything into it, and it must be a valid fusion packet. If it's not a valid fusion packet, it's like it never happened. So I end up doing that and can make that software available to you. I haven't changed it for a couple years now. I haven't had to. The servers basically run without any problem. And then the last part of it is you're going to have to do the bridging with a hotspot. Since the repeater's at your house, you'd want to put the hotspot at your house. And just you tune it to the frequency of the repeater, and away you go. And the other thing you need to do is make sure your YSF reflector number is the same as your YSX room number. You can get in a lot of problems if they're not. So hopefully that YSF number isn't taken yet. Go ahead, Steve.
This is extremely helpful. I'll start my reading and investigating if the numbers can be the same. I have every intention of running the YSF reflector on a hosted, probably virtualized server at one of the two hosting services I already use for other sorts of play. And and I think I'm done for tonight. I need to go to school. Pull down the GitHub distribution and read a bunch of forum postings, and then ping you about some of your modifications. Quite helpful. Thank you very much. This is Steve. K3FZT.
Okay, very good, Steve. Yeah, my distribution is unrelated to I've basically forked it and haven't looked back. But I can let you know where that is. I do not have it on GitHub. I plan on doing something about that at some point. But anyway, like I said, I've been running it. Oh gosh, I've probably been running it for 2 years now without any changes to it. I mean, there's features I'd like to add and whatever. I mean, I have stuff on the drawing board, like from a web interface, being able to bridge two YSF reflectors together essentially allows you to bridge two YSX rooms together, and to do some other things. Some of the stuff you got to be a little careful with. So the existing reflectors does some things really inefficiently, and I just wanted to clean some of that up. So I've got the thing running reliably, so now the thing is, you know, maybe adding some other features to it. I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done, like being able to store and record messages, or being able to make announcements, you know, like, you know, what time it is, or net tonight at 7:30, you know, that kind of stuff. All that stuff could be automated in the YSF reflector. It's just a matter of doing it. And to give it a Python interface, so it's easy to write code for it. Yeah, I'm in the reflectors that I host are in DigitalOcean, and I have a reflector up there that you can experiment with. It's the K9EQ reflector. It's at 12345. And that is a test development reflector. I make no guarantees that that's going to be there, but you're welcome to, you know, sometimes you need to get one part of it working first. Trying to get it all working at once, very difficult. So you've got that test reflector up there, K9EQ, the reflector number is 12345. Purely random. No, it wasn't. I made it 12345. I couldn't believe nobody was using that. And you can go ahead and use that, Steve. Okay, very good. Anybody else with any comments or questions? K9EQ.
V3IGN.
Okay, go ahead, Don. How's the day going for you? V3IGN from K9EQ.
Hey, Chris. Not bad. Not bad at all. Just doing fine up here in Canada. As you know, we had that polar vortex that came down here, and we experienced -32 degrees Celsius. I think it was about -27 Fahrenheit up here. It was a chilly day the last couple of days, but now we've warmed up and we're just in around freezing. Hopefully some of the snow will melt away. My question was, reference, you had mentioned a comment about the FTM 200 or 300. Which one do you guys think is going to be discontinued, and that's the one you want to grab because it's got the greatest and latest features in it? Would that be the 200, I guess, is the latest one out? Over.
Okay, well, to remind you, that's just a guess. It has not been discontinued. Nothing's been discontinued, except the 818 and the 400 from last year. The signs of it being discontinued was what I was talking about, that you'll see availability start to decline, and possibly coupled and or a sudden reduction in price, like all of a sudden, rather than a $30 off coupon from Yaesu, it's a $100 off coupon. And that's probably your leading indicator that it's being discontinued. After they've flushed out their inventory, then they will probably come out with a formal announcement. So this is one of those things like, is the company going to lay me off? Best to keep your ear to the ground. Are they going to discontinue a radio? Best to keep your ear to the ground. And it happens quickly, so I mean, check into the net every Monday, because if we know that that's happening, we'll mention it.
Yeah, K9QB3, you know, my bad, I kind of worded that the wrong way. No, I heard what you said. It could be an indicator. It's not discontinued yet, or who knows. But that was, the one to grab would be the 200. I guess that's the latest one out with all the neat features, right?
Well, it depends on what you need. There is a price difference between the 200 and the 300. It's not gigantic. You know, with the 300, you get the second receiver in it, simultaneous two-channel received with, of course, both of them not being digital. I mean, you can receive and transmit digital on both, just not simultaneously. And I think you get a Bluetooth in the 300 that you don't get in the 200. I mean, Otis might have, or somebody else might have, be more up to that. But what you have to do is look at the price difference and go, am I okay not having a Bluetooth? And, you know, if you think you want to add Bluetooth to it, the cost of the Bluetooth board, it's probably a better idea just to go with the 300. So it depends upon what you're looking for. If you just want a node radio, yeah, go with the 200. Don't spend money on things that don't benefit a node radio. Now go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I've been listening the last couple of weeks, many other weeks. I just kind of stay on the quiet side of listening, unless I have any real technical questions to ask. But I'm pretty satisfied. I got the 400. As you can see, I've got the FT1 here I'm talking off of. I've got the FT100 as my node radio. It's not on right now, and I also have a pair of VR2Xs that I'm experimenting with the LAN card. But anyways, I've been watching just looking at the reflector.com. I see a lot of VR2Xs all networked there in some sort of network they got going over in Europe. Have you seen that?
No, there's a dropout when you mentioned the network, I think. I mean, this is with IMRS. People have been playing around with IMRS networks, and I believe, XLS maybe. Yeah, there's an activity afoot to basically use the IMRS boards in the R2 repeaters to be able to connect to things like effectively what is like a YSF reflector. But no, I haven't really been paying much attention to that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I just thought if you read up on that and saw that. No, I was just moving around. Right now I'm just running one of those little hotspot jobbies. I got a Shark RF as well, but right now I'm running the hotspot, as it was quick and easy, simple to set up. And but I do have my laptop. I use a Toughbook, a Panasonic Toughbook, as my node computer. I think it stay on forever and it runs like a tank. Anyways, Chris, thanks a lot for the answering my questions, and I'll say 73s. Have yourself a nice evening. Really enjoy the net, listening to all the tech talk going on here, reference system fusion. And I'll say, 73s, and take care. And we'll talk again sometime. K90Q, this is VE3IG and Don out of Ottawa. Take care, Chris.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Don. I appreciate that. And Otis informs me that you also get cross-band repeat with the 300. I guess that makes sense. Well, the caveat there is that some pairs of frequencies for transmit and receive work better than other pairs. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on out there. And just for what it's worth, both you and Steve are on FT1s. I'm on an FT5 right now. And what else was I going to mention here? You're both on coming in on the YSF reflector. And KA1CNF also coming in on YSF. Anyway, very good. Anybody else? I know what I wanted to mention. Maybe for Steve's benefit, the situation here is where I live, I'm about 600 feet above average terrain, something like that. And so I got a repeater at my house, which is carrying MinWiz, and I also, effectively sitting on top of the repeater, I have a PiStar hotspot that I built with a Raspberry Pi and a board off of Amazon, and that's the hotspot that is doing the bridging between YSF and YSX. As a side note, I hear, we'll call it rumors, but informed rumors, that the Raspberry Pi availability should start to free up. It's going to be slow because there's pent-up demand, but probably, you know, summer-ish, maybe later, you should be able to get Raspberry Pis reasonably easily without having to deal with a scalper. If they're over the normal price for Raspberry Pis, it's a scalper. Anybody else for the net? K9EQ. Okay, hearing nothing, I think we'll wrap it up. Thanks for everybody who put up with my long diatribe about the FTM500, but I just kind of wanted to get that out there. And I think I'll wait for others to be the early adopters. But you know, if you got the money, and you know, it's probably going to be a fine radio. I mean, It's going to be built on the tradition that's been established, so there's a little risk there. That'd be great. If you do get a 500, come on to MinWiz here and key up our little tracker that keeps track of all the different radios and how many different ones we've seen on MinWiz. We'll flag it. We'll throw up an error message going, I don't recognize this radio, and I'll have to go and modify some code. And we'll know you've been there. So let us know if you get a FTM 500. 73 all. Look for you next week on the Bakken Amateur Radio Society Fusion Technical Net. 73 from K9EQ. And this concludes the Bakken Amateur Radio Society Fusion Technical Net, held Mondays at 7:30 p.m. Central Time, in room and YSF reflector 21493. Join us next week. We look forward to hearing from you. There's a chat in hamoperator.com where you can chat with the net control stations if you can't get on the air. And we also have a live streaming there, which you probably already know about, live streaming there as well, so you can access the net without having a radio. 73 from K9EQ.